All right, thanks for tuning in. This is the Canadian Taxpayers Podcast. My name is Franco Terrazano, and I'm the Alberta Director and Spokesperson for the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. And today we've got a great interview for you. We have Dan McTeague on the show, who is the president of the advocacy group called the Canadians for Affordable Energy. Now, before becoming the president of this advocacy organization, Dan spent nearly 2 decades as a member of parliament, which to me sounds like a bit of a life sentence, but it looks like it did Dan well. Now that he's out, he is well known across North America to both media and policymakers as a key go-to analyst of energy pricing. But today, specifically, the reason why we wanted Dan on the show is to talk about Trudeau's second carbon tax. And the Canadians for Affordable Energy, they just released an in-depth report on Trudeau's second carbon tax. And we wanted Dan on the show to unpack it, what it means for Canadian taxpayers, and all that good stuff. So Dan, it's great to have you on the show.
Well, thank you for the introduction. It's great to be here, Franco. I look forward to your questions.
Well, perfect. And on that note, let's get into it. So, Dan, can you just give us a high-level overview of what Trudeau's second carbon tax is and how the feds will be imposing this second carbon tax?
You know, first of all, they hate the word carbon tax, and they certainly don't like when it's a 2.0 version. This is really a build-up of what the Trudeau government had signed on to with its Paris Climate Agreement, in which it said it would achieve a reduction in carbon emissions of 30 megatons by 2030. To do that, of course, you have the existing carbon tax, which is placed pretty much at the end of all fuel use. So all of us as consumers receive that. And it's a very efficient way of doing things. But layered into this now is, of course, a policy driven by many of the zealots that work within the Trudeau government, certainly the commissars, environmental commissars in every one of those ministries, to push forward and double down on something the world has never seen. And that's to apply a carbon tax, a regulatory regime, which amounts to double taxation, if you will, on every stage of every fossil fuel. So that's not just gasoline or diesel, as we understand it with the current carbon tax. It's also on solids. So for instance, coal, gaseous products such as propane or natural gas, and of course, liquids, as I mentioned earlier, and at every single stage of its evolution. So from extraction to production, to distribution, and then again on the final use. This is quite apart from the existing carbon tax up there. And so what it means is a significant cost for industry to adapt to new technology, or more than likely because the technology may not be there, simply by carbon credits, which are then passed on to consumers. Of course, one of the biggest ways in which they do this, we can talk about this a little later, is by buying things like ethanol if they're not buying credits. And that, of course, means significant implications, not just for farming, but also, of course, the kind of products that come from ethanol that may not necessarily be environmentally friendly and probably have a larger carbon footprint than the very things we're using today.
Well, Dan, I just want to touch on a specific word that you just mentioned in your overview, and that is layered. And I want to make sure that our listeners understand that Trudeau's second carbon tax is being layered on top of the original one. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. And it's also one of the reasons major economists, green economists, here I'm thinking of William Nordhaus, here I'm thinking of people who have Mr. Hull economics degrees in terms of the green issue, have made it very clear that you cannot layer on another tax or another body of regulations that turns out to make the existing carbon taxes and the reduction of emission going in that direction, that mechanism that you're using, you would render it inefficient and likely to have the opposite effect of what's intended. We can talk about the effect on consumers in terms of the price, but from an industrial point of view and from a carbon tax purist point of view, there is no green economist out there who would argue for a secondary layering of taxes. And it explains, Franco, why no country in the world has attempted or even entertained the idea of going down this dangerous path as Canada is prepared to do.
Yeah. And I mean, layering on a tax, when I think of that and I think of timing, I mean, this to me seems like the worst possible time to be adding on a second carbon tax where you have so many families struggling and so many businesses struggling as well. But let's just take a quick step back for a second. And if you could just take us through an example of how this works. I mean, specifically, you know, you get oil from the ground and it goes to the refinery and all that, then it gets to the gas station and then ends up in my car. Well, you know, how does Trudeau's carbon tax impact this process and the cost for me, if you could explain that?
Well, there's an easy example. There's only two jurisdictions that I know of, California and British Columbia, the neighboring province. And I'm sure Chris Sims is very well ready on these kind of issues, where you have a low carbon fuel standard. Now, that's not applied to oil when it's extracted, because, of course, that's not the intended purpose, but it's at the end use. That's costing consumers about 13 cents a liter. And that's just for gasoline, about 15, 16 cents a liter for diesel. That's because it doesn't take into account things like storage costs, prohibition on building separate infrastructure to contain, for instance, ethanol. You can't put ethanol in gasoline and leave it there for a couple of months, because it contaminates, it invites water, and it creates real problems. So you need a special infrastructure just to do that. What consumers really need to understand is that, quite apart from the carbon tax that continues to increase, and it will increase another 5 to 7 cents a liter here in Alberta and right across Canada with the existing carbon tax that'll take us to $50 a ton. We're at 30 right now. This is likely to be compounded with yet another layering of taxes and putting another burden on not only the cost to industry to produce oil or coal or natural gas, that then is passed on to consumers. It doesn't just, you know, it's not something that oil companies or natural gas companies or even those involved with the petrochemical sector, an important vital part of our economy. Think of the, you know, this pandemic and the need for use for PPEs, many of them derived from oil products. Those will have to be passed on to consumers. Of course, for many businesses, the question is, can we afford this? Is it possible? Will consumers actually pay for it? Or will our competitors who are not subject to such an onerous regime coming from the United States or from other parts of the world who have no such particular program compete us to the point where we can no longer stay in business? That has enormous implications, obviously, for capital investments in Canada. And it definitely has a huge impact, not just on the price of everything, which is likely to shoot up well beyond inflationary, normal inflationary levels. It's likely to lead to significant job losses.
Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up the cost, because, I mean, this is a Canadian taxpayers podcast. So we like to focus on the cost of taxes. And really, I think that's what the high level, what Canadian taxpayers need to know about this is that this is going to cost a lot of money. And the report that the Canadian for Affordable Energy put out, great report, and we'll include it in the show notes, but it went over a ton of costs to the economy, to just the cost of living and to jobs. So can you just take us through some of those costs from Trudeau's second carbon tax?
Well, the carbon tax, the second version, is going to lead to a loss, a net loss of about 30,000 jobs in Canada. And that's assuming, of course, the current model in place. It hasn't been completely proclaimed, but we know that the gazetting, which is really the last stage before regulations take place, is at hand. The Minister of Environment and Climate Change, John Wilkinson, said it's going to happen this fall. There was a bit of a delay during the springtime because of the pandemic. So look for an impact of about 30,000 jobs. Look at a net loss of about $22 billion in capital. You mentioned earlier, this is the worst possible time when we need to grow the economy. Even green economists and folks like Don Drummond and former bank governor David Dodge have talked about the need to grow the economy to pay down this massive debt that we've incurred. And that's a debate for another group and for another time. You've got to grow the economy, not saddle it with more trendy, burdensome, unproven, and very dangerous regulations that at the end of the day will uniquely hurt Canada, a country that is already producing clean energy. Of course, the very term clean fuel standard is dishonest and it is misleading. Canada has already achieved clean emissions when it comes to tailpipe and industrial emissions. We have very strict laws in that regard. So we've seen, a tripling the number of vehicles on the road in the past 30 years, and yet we see that the amount of tailpipe emissions from a car built in 1980 would be the equivalent of 17, 18 cars on the road today. So by any measure, this is a very dangerous policy that has not been very well thought out, and it's likely to have enormous, significant, damaging implications, not just for consumers and for business, but for the totality of the economy as a whole. It's going to lessen, by the way, the capital available to the provinces to also manage in very difficult times. So, I don't know where the argument is coming from. The arguments that have been put forward have been both misleading and erroneous. And the very assumption that somehow green economists support this is absolutely false and should be, and it is fundamentally flawed.
Well, okay, Dan, let me just repeat some of those numbers because they're worth repeating. They're very eye-opening. So the report estimates that we could be seeing up to 30,000 job losses and approximately $22 billion of capital at risk. The report also estimates that the cost of gasoline could increase by about 10 to 20%, depending on what province you're in. The cost of natural gas can go up 3 to 4%, again, depending on what province you're in. And, you know, I think you touched on a key point there where it's misleading in terms of the environment. Now, you know, I suspect when all of this gets pushed forward, the case for it will be made, well, this is going to help the environment. But I think if we look at Canada's already a historical experience with the carbon tax, where you look to neighboring BC for me here in Alberta, where they have the highest carbon tax in Canada, you still see emissions going up. And then when you look from a global perspective, where Canada accounts for what, 1.5% of global GHGs, I mean, from a global perspective, even if we were to bring our economy to a screeching halt, I don't see it making any impact for the global environment. So, you know, do you think that Trudeau's second carbon tax will have an impact for the global environment, or do you see this more of just like economic pain for Canadians?
Yeah, no, it'll be uniquely punishing on Canadians. And by the way, it's not just a 10% increase in diesel and gasoline. It's a 10-cent increase that we're looking at in Ontario, Alberta. We're looking at 13 to 18 cents a liter in British Columbia. Look, Canada is a solution to many of the concerns. We are following down this path of carbon emissions, agree or disagree with them. One would think that you'd be well advised to leave well enough alone. But even if we were to suggest for a moment that putting aside what's happening in Canada, we could, for instance, sell natural gas to China to prevent from building out another 300 to 500 coal plants. We are, in fact, the solution. And we have great infrastructure and a willingness to do these things, but we get absolutely no credit for it, given the rush of this government to have signed in haste, a Paris climate agreement, which is uniquely damaging to energy-intensive nations like ours, but even nations that have had a great record in clean energy. Why do I say this? As a member of parliament, I served the riding of Pickering, homed in the 1960s and early 70s to the first commercial nuclear reactors, clean energy, way back then. So the idea of clean energy is not a new concept, and we've done very well in that regard as far as bringing down emissions. But we give ourselves no credit for it. In fact, long before the United States, which can achieve any of these objectives, decided to shift from coal to natural gas, Canada had already done so. So to agree to a limitation of another 30% below 2005 levels is preposterous, and it does not take into account reality. And unfortunately, much of this policy is based on magic, they believe, not on fundamental realities at a particularly crucial time in our history as a country, particularly on the economic side.
Well, I think one of the fundamental realities when you talk about economics is that we are now in a global world. We are competing for capital all around the world. And on that point, you know, I stumbled across a very chilling quote from Saskatchewan's energy minister about Trudeau's second carbon tax. And Dan, I'm going to read it to you, and I'd love to get your response on it. This is what Saskatchewan's energy minister said, quote, "So we would end up importing massively from the U.S. in particular, if this goes through. We would be helping U.S. workers and we'd be hurting our own. Just a terrible thing across the board," end quote. So, Dan, look, what do you think about that quote in terms of Trudeau's second carbon tax?
I don't disagree with it. What bothers me is that as a member of parliament in 2008 and 1995, and as a young budding staffer to the Honorable Paul Cosgrove, when we had the 1981-82 crash, in which people saw 24% interest rates, one of the things that helped Canada out at every turn was its ability to grow its energy sector, to build more pipelines and to get our energy to the rest of the world. And we did so in a very efficient way, and in a way that, of course, put above all environmental stewardship. This is a demonstration, I think, that it's not a question of simply being an energy producing provinces issue. It's a total Canadian issue. And if the folks in Quebec or Alberta, or Nova Scotia, or Newfoundland, or Ontario think that you can somehow wish away the hydrocarbon industry, you're dreaming technicolor. And I think this is what we have to understand, is that even those who are preaching this idea that there is some kind of a climate emergency and that we have to shed everything that we're doing and that we have to shred the economy, have to, at the end of the day, certainly understand as teachers, for instance, that you have a pension that's heavily invested, not just in Canadian energy, but actually in Chinese coal. So look, when you really start to peel back the layers, what the minister, I think, has quite rightly pointed out is that this isn't just a regional thing. The entire country is at risk. And I point out very quickly, Franco, if anybody wants to talk about the impact on jobs, and they think it's just a Saskatchewan, Alberta thing, Alberta could lose 6,000 jobs. Ontario, you're going to lose 11,800 jobs. And the impact on capital, on the cost of and the constraints for compliance are $7 billion. It's greater than Alberta and Saskatchewan combined. So I'm speaking from Ontario. I have never taken the position of ever, being a friend of the oil industry. I'm one of the few guys as a member of Parliament that actually took them on over competition. At the end of the day, I never hoped to destroy that industry, and because I know its importance in terms of our supporting our social programs. But people have to understand, those taxes that come from the growth revenues from that industry support the Canada we know and love. All that now is at risk because people have simply ignored the fact that Trudeau has a plan, not just to impose a second carbon tax, but to impose a regime that will destroy much of Canada's energy and manufacturing sector with it.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the point of how our oil and gas industry really helps produce the revenue that governments rely on to provide services that Canadians demand, right? Like more nurses, more teachers, more hospitals, things like that. I mean, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, we went on a cross-country pipeline tour to raise awareness about that, that it's not just jobs that we're creating, which are so important, but we're really producing the government revenue through the oil and gas industry that so many Canadians depend on for these services. Now, I just want to take one quick step back and go back to the Saskatchewan Energy Minister's quote and something that I want to dive into here because we're talking about job losses. She said, to paraphrase, is that, you know, we would be helping U.S. workers and hurting our own. And to me, that almost seems like, too, are we really helping the environment if we're just displacing investment? So I'd love to get your thoughts on that as well.
Well, ethanol production, which is one way in which you do achieve part of this reduction, would come from the United States. You're not going to help Canadian farmers. In fact, what you're going to do is displace Canadian farmers who might currently be producing other types of products. And for that reason alone, that should be disconcerting for those of us who think there's no consequence here. Let's look at, though, at the way in which ethanol is produced, the conventional corn. Much of it may be done by electricity that is done and you bending the molecules and going through the process, done by coal generation. So in fact, the carbon footprint for much of this ethanol could very well be counterproductive. More importantly, I'm from the old automotive industry. Yes, I was public relations specialist with Toyota Canada prior to becoming a member of parliament. And my big concern, the concern of many companies with ethanol, is it's not as efficient an energy. And so, you know, when you're putting more ethanol in, expect less mileage. What does that mean? Well, that means that cars are gonna travel less, they're gonna use more. More importantly, the reality of our labor market is that under normal circumstances, it grows 2-3% per year. That in and of itself, and the study points this out, will remove any potential for reduction in emissions. And that's why, of course, as you quite rightly pointed out, and I think the Minister for Energy for Saskatchewan understands, even in California and in British Columbia, where there is a light version of a clean fuel standard, they call it low carbon fuel standard, you've actually seen the emissions rise. So it's an unfortunate policy, but it's central to what the federal Liberals are calling their green recovery. I refer to it as the green robbery. And I think kudos to the taxpayers, the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, for doing what it is doing at highlighting this very critical issue, because it's going to cripple the Canadian economy and reduce energy affordability in Canada to a level that we have never seen, certainly in our lifetime.
Yeah, well, we see this as all economic pain without the environmental gain. And on that note of economic pain, now, the original carbon tax, the Trudeau government has been saying, you know, essentially the money you pay on the original carbon tax, you're going to get that money back. And now, you know, we can arm wrestle over whether that's right or not. And, you know, I have major issues with that, but that's another fight for another day. But I just want to make sure our listeners understand, with Trudeau's second carbon tax, what we're talking about today, there are no rebates or checks coming into mail for this. Is that correct?
None at all. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's going to
objective. It's not to give a rebate. So and this, of course, has much of the consternation of carbon tax purists who say this is a duplication. This is a redundancy. Layering on regulations makes business and consumers and the objective itself more elusive.
And there's another important taxpayer implication that your report highlights, and I'm glad it did. And it talks about the fact that Trudeau's second carbon tax could actually blow a further hole in government budgets and increase deficits. So can you speak to that?
So if there is a significant drawdown in economic activity and industry, and if you look at circumstances where, you know, people are out of work, it means, and we alluded to it a little earlier, that the budgetary implications could be in the tens of billions of dollars for the country as a whole. But we only look at that from a federal point of view. From the provincial standpoint, it could be as troubling. You know, for instance, if I look at Ontario, is there the ability to withstand costs of compliance and denial of revenue in the order of $5 billion to the province of Ontario? I'm talking Ontario because we tend to think of a clean fuel standard or oil or any type of attack or tax on fossil fuels as being an Alberta issue. I see it differently. As a member of parliament from Ontario for 18 years, as someone who lives in Ontario, this is a significant problem. And of course, it's going to have enormous negative implications for the balance sheets of every single premier in this country. So, you know, anybody, any province that thinks it's, you know, nothing in it for them, they had best look twice, because the amount of money that the province of Ontario is going to have to disperse, $5 billion, isn't chump change.
Well, I'm glad you brought up those implications, right? It's going to cost taxpayers at the pump. It's going to cost us jobs. And I mean, it could blow further holes in budgets at all the worst possible time. Now, Dan, I just have one more question for you here today, and that's around process. So what's the process here for the Trudeau government to do this, right? What are the next steps? Where are we, and what do they still have to do with Parliament to get this carbon tax imposed?
Parliament did its job. It signed off on this carte blanche in 2017. The parliamentary House of Commons and Senate has already disposed of it and given the federal government a free range in terms of writing up the regulations. Those regulations have gone through a period of consultation. That consultation is over. The regulations were to be made in effect in spring, but of course were delayed as a result of the COVID pandemic, and the Minister for Climate Change and Environment has now said that will be this fall. So the clock is ticking. We may be only days, if not weeks, away. We may hear some hubbub about hydrogen and whatnot from this government over the next few days. Remember, of course, hydrogen isn't possible without natural gas, but that aside, this is imminent, and it only requires the very last imprimatur of government. That's called gazetting. That's the official declaration that as of this moment, starting in 2022, on January 1st, every industry will have to begin to comply. And so we have about a year's window to begin the process of trying to tackle this and understand the implications. But by 2022, exactly when the carbon taxes begin to end, driving, for instance, gasoline prices up another 7 or 8 cents a liter, you're going to have yet another 13 to 14 cents added to it as a result of this. And that's only for one product. Our estimation is, for instance, 60% additional cost for natural gas. CERI, the Canadian Energy Research Institute, puts it at a 200% increase for your natural gas. So the cost of living, the cost of staying warm, and the higher cost of keeping your job is just going to become that much more difficult. Compliments of a not well thought out and misleadingly termed clean fuel standard.
Okay, so just to make sure everyone understands the timeline, we're expecting the regulations to be fully available to the public any day now, or a matter of weeks, or sometime this fall, with the regulations, if we don't tackle it, to be coming into force early 2022. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Oh boy, we sure do have a big fight ahead of us as taxpayers and Canadians. But Dan, you know, thanks again for coming on the show and sharing all this information with us.
Frank, it's important you and the Canadian taxpayers take this up, and I can't thank you enough for it. Again, if anybody has any questions, your site or ours, of course, which is simply affordableenergy.ca. Look for the LFX report written by some great Canadian economists, and pretty hard to argue against. I've tried to find some holes in it. We've worked on this for some time. Let's bring this issue to all Canadians. They understand the implications are not very positive for anybody.
And of course, we will include a link of the report on Trudeau's second carbon tax in the show notes. And in the show notes, we'll also include a link to our petition to stop Trudeau's second carbon tax. So you can find that in the show notes and on taxpayer.com. And don't worry, because the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, yeah, we're definitely going to fight Trudeau's second carbon tax with everything we got. So thanks to Dan, and thank you for listening to our show. Please share it with your buddies. But until next time, have a good one.